Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Branson, together with my co-host, Paul Wearson. Hi, Paul.
Well, hello, Susan, and to all our listeners, hello. Don't we have some monthly visitors coming in today?
Yes, it's time for the Bird of Mouth, Bird of the Month for May, the Robin. We have Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms here in the studio to start us off. But we want to let people know what's coming. You said you knew something about Hamilton County that you think would interest our listeners. What's that?
Well, while we were paying attention to last week's celebrations in Story County and Boone County, there was something going on up in Hamilton County at Little Wall Lake State Park near Jewell. They held a ribbon cutting as the first county park in Iowa to have 100% offset of its electricity by producing its own power through a solar array. In the second part of the show, we'll have Brian Lammers, the Hamilton County Conservation Director, and Larry Steffen, Vice President of Sales for Eagle Point Solar, the Dubuque-based company that financed, designed, and built the array at Little Wall Lake. This is something that I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be interested to hear about. Very educational.
I think you're right. And it will leave just enough time to go over to Nevada for Mother's Day at the gatherings. That's just one of the many things that are going on in Nevada. But before we begin our program, we need to remind our listeners that our spring fun drive is still underway. I'm assuming that if you're listening, you're already a member. But part of our goal is 25 new members.
Well, it's through new members that we grow. So invite your friends to listen to your favorite programs. And don't be shy. You'll be doing them a favor.
One of the things that is really gratifying about membership time is that people come into the station in person, people we've never seen before, and give us checks and tell us why they like the station. One was a woman who came in asking how she could become a sustaining friend. That's someone who gives $20 a month or more. So that's a friend.
Yes, it's sure nice to have friends like that, too.
And it would be nice if there were a few more. So think about it. But now we have Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms, originators of Iowa Bird of Mouth, here to introduce the bird for May. While we're waiting for them to speak, let's give the bird a chance to introduce himself.
Tell us, Jennifer, what's going on with the bird of the mouth? Tell us about the robin and why you chose. I think it's kind of obvious, but tell us why you chose it.
Well, we're very lucky to have Tyler here today because Tyler actually chose all the birds for Iowa Bird of Mouth in order that we'd see them in out in the world. And you said it was sort of like a Sophie's choice.
Oh, yeah. Tough to do. Well, Tyler, tell us about the robin in May.
So I chose the robin in May for obvious reasons. As you said, Paul, everybody knows the robin. It's a very, very common bird. We all know the robin. We all see them in our yards. And they're known to be one of the harbingers of spring. They start singing, as Susan mentioned, early in the morning, one of the first birds to sing in the morning, particularly in the spring. And so it was a very obvious choice. I mean, it's hard to have a list of 12 birds for the state of Iowa and not have the robin on there.
Oh, yeah. Well, tell us a little more about it is a crowdsourced project. Is that right, Jennifer?
It is. It's a crowdsourced poetry project online. Anyone can come onto the site, and they can write up to 300 words a day. You can write your verse with a group, which I have been doing with elementary school classrooms out at Story County Conservation. And I've also done it with arts organizations, and sometimes just my family will be sitting around, and we come up with a verse, and we'll lay it on the poem. Or you can do it individually in a quieter time.
So anybody can do this.
Anybody from all over the world.
I just remember the song, When the Red, Red Robin Comes Bob, Bob, Bobbing Along. That must be from the 1920s. And I guess that heralds spring. Mm-hmm. And today it's raining outside. I hope the robins are taking shelter. Now, do you have any examples of some of this poetry we've been seeing?
I do. I have. I brought in two poems today from the Robin, poem for the American Robin. The first one was written with a third grade classroom from Sawyer Elementary. This is Miss Newberg's class, and it's called WeirdRobin.com. Searching for worms, it has a red belly. It has a sharp beak sticking through the dirt to the worm tunnel. They were looking for tree seeds. They plant trees. They're also murderers. They murder worms, insects, and anything. There's an old saying, what is coming in is going out. Food and seeds are coming into the robin. They sing when they are in danger or talking to each other. Their eggs are blue. Cheery up, cheery up, cheerily. My name is Robin. I'm Batman's sidekick. I'm Teen Titans Go. I love Penguin. What if he doesn't love Penguin? I'm a cat's feast. A dog saved me from this cat. If you see me, I'm the first one, and that means spring is coming. I love tigers. And I like unicorns. I eat worms, insects, and seeds. Basketball's awesome. I like to dance on a tree. I hate dogs. Come on! Dogs are cool. I wish I could visit Olympus and Pegasus. I wear tiny socks every day.
You can almost hear the kids talking. No, it's not.
Yeah, they're contradicting each other like an actual flock of birds crossing each other. And those are my favorite moments when you get those group-inspired verses that it does not flow smoothly just like the way birds actually sing.
So you have groups and individuals submitting poetry. What's the response been so far?
It's been great. We've had, the last time I counted, we've had over 350 submissions, both by groups and individuals. And by the end of the project, we're on the eighth month now? Eighth?
Yeah.
Or the ninth?
It's one of those months.
It's one of those months. It's one of those numbers.
Tyler, tell us about the robin's habitat. It seems to me at my farm, they love to go in the evergreens and nest. Is that right?
They will nest almost anywhere, Paul. It's very interesting. They are one of those species that are adapted to use about any habitat that's available, which is why they're quite likely one of the most common birds throughout the world. I've seen robin nests in barns. I've seen robin nests on the ground in the middle of crop fields.
I didn't know they went in barns. I think of barn swallows and other birds, but robins nest in barns too.
They are opportunists, yes. They will nest almost anywhere.
And what do they make their nests of? Just all kinds of twigs? And I know a lot of nests are individual to different types of birds. What do robins like? You know, sparrows have all this mess. Are robins orderly and symmetrical or what?
Robins are pretty orderly and symmetrical, yes. Actually, they, when you think of a bird nest, kind of a common bowl-shaped bird nest, the robin nest is often one that comes to mind first. They make their nests of very fine grasses, kind of intertwined among one another, and very, very symmetrical, almost looks like you could eat your cereal out of it in the morning. Nice bowl-shaped nest.
Well, I've noticed that in barns, you know, the barn swallows come back to the same nest every year. Do robins reconstruct every year?
Robins will. They will sometimes use nests, not necessarily the same nest every year, but they might stumble across a nest from the previous year that somebody else made and use it. But oftentimes they will build new nests.
I have a couple of robin's nest stories that I'm dying to tell.
Oh, please.
Oh, do it, Susan. Yeah.
Earlier, Paul mentioned that at his farm that the robins all want to come up to the front door where the cats are, and it's kind of dangerous.
I've been talking to him about this. They're not reforming.
They're just not listening.
No, it's not listening.
But anyway, I had some friends who had a house out near the golf course, and right by their front door, by the mailbox, there was this beautiful little robin's nest, and they said that robins came there every year and laid eggs in that. And I mean, they were so close to the, you know, people were within inches of them all the time, and they But the other one is we used to have a deck on the back of our house, and there was a branch from a silver maple that stuck out over the deck, and a robin decided to build her nest there. And it was not a beautiful little round nest. It was a kind of a droopy nest.
Like an old sock.
Yeah. Mm. And I don't think she ever was able to use it, but she kept working on it. And I felt so sorry for this robin because she wasn't going to get anything for all this work. And
you're not going to make it.
Right. So I don't know. She finally gave up, but I don't know whether she found another place for a nest.
Well, now I wondered if robins mated for life. Do they? And what is their lifespan anyway?
They're fairly short-lived, like most other songbirds. Yeah, probably 4 years maybe on average. And to my knowledge, they do not mate for life, but I could be wrong.
So it's like Hollywood. There's a different mate every year.
Well, I think if you're going to be that successful, you have to be flexible, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. It's very modern of them.
The modern robin. That's what I'm writing today.
So the poems are flowing in about what kind of variety? Is it always a theme of a robin, or do people stray from that?
Well, I have another little poem that someone put on the site that is very different from weirdrobin.com. It's just a small four-line one, and it sort of answers your question. The sea serpent in Big Spirit Lake was like a giant underwater worm being tugged from the water by an even bigger, invisible robin.
Wow.
So very different from the first
one. Sounds
like
the theme of a sci-fi.
Yes.
There's a huge, I'm getting a picture in my mind that frightens me.
Yeah.
It's back to my nightlight tonight. So now tell us more about the project so people who haven't heard about it before might know a little more, because we kind of came in here as if everyone was knowledgeable.
The project is sponsored by the Iowa Arts Council and the National Endowment for the Arts. It lasts a year. We began in September, and we have a different spotlight bird every month that Tyler has chosen.
Oh, Tyler, what's the preview for June?
Preview for June? I was just thinking of that earlier, and I don't know that I can remember. Is it the bluebird?
Eastern bluebird.
I'll go with bluebird, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sorry, Jennifer, continue.
Sure. We started off with the goldfinch, and then the ringneck pheasant, the crow, the eastern screech owl, the bald eagle, the northern cardinal, which was very popular, of course, as we're in Psy country, and then the trumpeter swan, or was there something else in there?
Red-winged blackbird.
Red-winged blackbird, which was also very fun. And we just finished the trumpeter swan poem, and now we're on the robin, and we have three birds to go. This is all open-source text, so when you submit a verse, a line, or a word to the poem, anyone out there can use it for non-commercial purposes, and we're hoping that people do, like musicians, and perhaps the Iowa DNR can find a place to use all these fine verses. I'm going to stitch them all together when we're done and put them on the website so people can see them.
And what's the mechanics of this? How do they do this?
Well, they go to the site, they go to the submit page, and there's a window that they can type their verse into. They click, I agree that this is open source text, and then they can add their name to the contributors list, which now is very long, getting longer every day. There's everyone on it from a second grade brownie troop in Des Moines to a Guggenheim fellow to a finalist for the National Book Award. So the range of skill and accomplishment of the contributors is very wide, which is very fun for me to see. Again, it's like a flock of birds.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, I have a question about your website. Mm-hmm. I noticed this month when I was looking for the link that we're going to put up that robin has a very spectacular picture. Mm. I think I saw that you had done something similar last month with trumpeter swans, but I didn't see the website. So it's there with the poem. So
is it the one that's the collage?
It's a collage.
Those collages come from, and you'll know the name of the book, Crowell? Crowell's Birding Guide, Cromwell's Birding Guide.
Crossley?
Yes. So all of those fabulous collages are public domain. Anyone can use them for non-commercial purposes, and they come from the Crossley
Guide, yes. Guide,
which has been around for a long time.
Is the Crossley Guide like the Bible?
For birding.
It's one of them, yeah. One of the neat things about the Crossley Guide, which is different from other field guides, is that it actually uses pictures, like Jennifer mentioned. Most field guides use illustrations.
Mm-hmm. And they create these collages with a range of what the bird looks like, male and female, younger, older, and they're all sharing this space, and it's a work of art.
Yeah, I thought it was really neat. I hadn't Googled the bird of month and found that before. Now, do those go away at the end of the month, or can people refer to them?
They can always go back and find those collages on the page with the birds, which is where their poems will live when their poems are done at the end of the month. That's where they go.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
We've got the live bird on the submit page, and then when it's finished, you can find them under the birds.
Okay.
This is wonderful. Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms, the Iowa Bird of Mouth Project. Susan, this was fun.
Now, we're a little tight on time. Do you have a short Trumpeter Swan?
I do.
Swan?
Yes. This
Trumpeter
was,
Swan, yeah.
Trumpeter Swan, this was last month. This is my favorite poem from the Trumpeter Swan poem. My name is Juan. I am a swan. I met Sam. How we swam, Sam and Juan, swam and swam.
That's funny.
Wow.
Sometimes I just think that, Sam and Juan.
Now, we have a recording of a trumpeter swan.
Let's see how it came out. Our robins weren't so satisfactory this morning. Yeah.
That's them, all right.
Yeah.
Wow. Sam and Juan.
That sounds like me at 4 a.m. if I wake up. Sort of squawk.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh. Well, that was just great. Jennifer and Tyler, please come back again, will you?
Yes. Thank you.
Will. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames. And your hosts for today are Susan Branson and Paul Wearson. We've been talking with Jennifer Knox and Paul and Tyler Harms about the bird of month for May, the robin, and a little about the bird for last month, April, the trumpeter swan. Next, we have a report from an event that took place last Saturday at Little Wall Lake. I thought about your lake poem when we...
Well, now, Susan, this was not a festival like the ones we featured last week, but it was certainly something to celebrate. Little Wall Lake Park near Jewell recently became the first county park in Iowa to have 100% offset of its electricity by producing its own power through solar energy. On Saturday, a group of dignitaries and members of the public gathered for a ribbon-cutting ceremony to celebrate the $300,000 project. And now we have Brian Lammers, Executive Director of Hamilton County Conservation, and he's going to tell us the story of how Little Wall Lake Park achieved that. Hi, Brian. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Well, how was this idea born? Tell us about it.
Well, it actually started just over about 3 years ago. I happened to be watching the nightly news on television, and they showed a farmer that had a solar array system, and I started thinking, why are we in conservation not doing a similar project if we have those capabilities? So I had an area picked out in one of our county parks and decided that I'd start looking into this a little bit more. So I started working with a couple different companies on solar power, but they just really couldn't work with the logistics that we had, and because we were a government agency, that made another wrinkle into the mix. So we finally ended up working with Eagle Point Solar from Dubuque, Iowa, and they were certainly able to handle all of our needs because that is their business. They just work strictly with solar power.
I'm glad you found an Iowa company to do the work for you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it was nice to keep it in state.
Now, what were the obstacles that you ran into? You had to run this past various people, I'm sure, and there were skeptics. Did you have to overcome some opposition?
Yeah, and that's part of the 3-year process, I guess. You know, there's a number of things that came up. Well, first, the first one we had to deal with was, you know, Iowa had some state and federal tax credits available by using renewable energies. And becoming a, you know, as a government agency, we could not utilize or take advantage of those tax credits. And with our county budget and our park systems, you know, there's just no way we had this kind of money to, you know, outright purchase a whole solar array system. So after that was looked into, you know, we worked with our county board of supervisors. They were very supportive on the project because the idea that I had was I already budget, you know, close to or just over $30,000 a year for electrical needs in that county park alone. We could use our existing line item budget for electrical and just continue to pay a monthly bill like we normally do, which brought into the option of using a power purchase agreement or a PPA. We were able to do that with Eagle Point Solar because they're a large enough company that they could handle the offset of the entire project and then just purchase it back from them.
So your budget for normal electrical delivery services was around $30,000, is that right?
That's correct, on an annual basis, just for that one park alone.
Mm-hmm. That's unbelievable. Of course, you have all those trailer hookups.
Yeah, we have about 106 campsites. We have 3 modern cabins. And the lake, you know, it's a very busy lake. I mean, it gets used quite a bit in the summertime. You know, being located between Sailorville and Clear Lake, it's about the only option we have in central Iowa for a boating lake. And, of course, the campground was renovated starting back in 2009, so we renovated completely every site. And we saw our numbers go way up after that, you know, so we started thinking, okay, it's great to build these new things, but it also comes with a little bit of a cost. So we were trying to find ways that we could actually cut back our electrical costs and, you know, help those taxpaying dollars out.
When did you start construction for the site?
Well, we actually started the construction side of things here in the first part of March of this year. And they had pretty much everything done towards the middle of April. So it was a very quick process, you know, watching these things go up, you know, the skeleton going up. You know, it's not that difficult of a design. I think their biggest obstacle they had to deal with is the topography of the land. There's a little bit of a hill on this location, and they just followed the contour of that land, and it looks really nice on both sets.
Now, how visible is this from the camping area or the surrounding area? Is it sort of amidst a group of vegetation or trees, so it's screened from the public, or what?
Well, no, it's actually in one of our largest open fields inside the park that we have. It was an area that we used to use as a ball field where kids could go out and play and have that big open room. We also used it for additional parking on our 4th of July event every year. So what we did was we took out a section of that to install these solar array systems, but we still utilized the rest of it for additional parking and open spaces. So, yeah, you can see it from the campground on the north end of the campground. There's actually 2 rows of these arrays, so it's really difficult to see the second row unless you walk out there and walk through them.
And now this is actually functioning as we speak, is that right?
Yeah, you bet. They actually turned it on here about 16 days ago, so we definitely like to see the sun out every day. What's really nice is they set up a graph or basically a computer website that we will eventually get linked to our website, and you can monitor the daily output of what the thing is producing.
Wow, that's just fantastic, you know. I'm an old man now, so it's all new technology to me, and I'm amazed at it. And, of course, it has to be worked out with the power company. You remain hooked to the grid, don't you?
Yeah, this is something. It's because we have that capability of working with Alliant Energy. You know, Alliant is one of our largest companies in Iowa for electrical usage there. They were very receptive on helping us out, on getting things set up. You know, it takes a little bit to do that thing with paperwork, but if it wasn't for Alliant Energy, you know, I don't think we could have done this with another company, you know, unless it's a larger one.
Well, I'm really happy to hear the power company was cooperative and, in fact, encouraging, because that's a very important link in this to get that worked out so that you can continue to be hooked to the grid and all the material. I'm an Alliant client. So that sounds poetic. I'm an Alliant client out on my farm, and it's very obvious from the things they publish that they are encouraging all kinds of conservation and very receptive to new ways of, you know, cooperating to produce electricity. And so I think this is a great hookup for you.
Yeah, we can lower our carbon footprint, you know, and like I said, with, as a county conservation board, these are the projects that we should be doing. You know, we're kind of, you know, it's kind of neat to see that we're the first county park in the state of Iowa to do such a thing, and I'm really hoping that this might set an example for other, you know, municipalities or other county governments that look into this to help offset their costs.
Oh, I'm almost sure that you're going to have contact from other agencies in the state, because this is going to get some publicity, and within the shops that are all familiar with what everyone else is doing in the field, you're going to have visitors, I'm sure.
Right.
And this probably is the first of many arrays throughout the state of Iowa. Now, what kind of use does the park get year-round?
Well, basically, we, you know, I guess I don't have the car counter numbers in front of me, but like I said, we have 106 campsites out there. And
it's full every weekend. I drive
by.
Yeah,
well, it's awfully close. If we did an average, we're probably doing, you know, close to 90 in our peak season. And what's unique about the, you know, the solar array, obviously in the wintertime, we are not, you know, having those campers out there. However, our cabins are open year-round, but, you know, if we produce, you know, extra, you know, electricity during the wintertime, it has that opportunity to go back onto the grid. And if it's in the middle of summer, like a July 4th, and we are overusing what we normally should be producing, you know, we have that ability to pull it back off the grid. So it's kind of a two-way street, and it works out really well. As far as numbers go, you know, it's actually our busiest county park that we have in our county. You know, numbers-wise, boy, it's probably up there in definitely the thousands and thousands of them.
Well, I love Little Wall Lake, and when I was a boy, it was all really a wetland with reeds and everything, and they finally dredged it, and I know that's a continuing operation. One more question, though, about the array. How vulnerable would that be to vandalism? Is that a concern?
Well, yeah, it is. You know, we've got some great customers down here at Little Wall Lake. You know, they respect it, and they understand what we do and what we try to do. But, you know, there's always those opportunities for someone to, you know, not make it work for anybody else. But what we do is the solar array panels are actually designed to withstand quite a beating. I mean, they're set up for hailstorms, and the panels themselves pretty much will be there for probably a long time. They put a 25-year warranty on them. And then the inverters, the electrical underneath, are probably the ones that have to be replaced about every 10 to 15 years, depending if they decide to go out. We will eventually may put a fence around the system just for people to keep them from, you know, getting out on top of them, which we don't want. But it's also designed to be an educational process where we want people to come out and look at this thing and explain our story and how this thing works.
Well, it's been delightful. Brian Lammers, he's executive director of the Hamilton County Conservation, to tell us the story of the Little Wall Lake Park solar energy array. Thanks very much, Brian.
Thank you.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. You've been listening to a story about Little Wall Lake near Jewell from the perspective of Brian Lammers, Executive Director of Hamilton County Conservation, telling us how Little Wall Lake Park became the first county park in Iowa to have 100% offset of its electricity by producing its own power through a solar array.
And now I think our listeners might be interested in some of the technical and business issues involved. And for that, we're fortunate to have Larry Steffen from Eagle Point Solar here in the studio to tell us about those. Also, those of us interested in installing a solar array, we might need to know this. So welcome to our studio, Larry. How are you?
It's great to be here. I appreciate you giving us the opportunity to do this.
I am just amazed. Now, how long have you folks been going over there?
We're based out of Dubuque. We're in our seventh year right now. We have approximately 370 solar projects in our portfolio, and that would be split between residential arrays, agricultural arrays, municipalities, school districts, and commercial. So it's a pretty even split, and we go after those specific target markets. And the government area, like Hamilton County, was something that we are definitely focusing on due
Is that
to
relatively new to be involved with a government agency.
Well, Brian alluded to the fact of the power purchase agreement that we had with them, and that was not legal in Iowa up until a Supreme Court ruling that came down in July of 2014 in favor of Eagle Point Solar that allowed us to at least bring this funding option to the table. And that opened up a lot of doors for our company, and it obviously opened up a door for Hamilton County.
Oh, sure. Now, my brother taught school at Dubuque High School. And I remember we used to visit Eagle Point Park. So I think that might be your namesake. Is that right?
There is a connection. There's no doubt about that, yes.
Well, now, I read that solar power is becoming more and more affordable, panels to build them and all that sort of thing. And I just wondered, in growing this business, what's been the experience? People are receptive to this. It's a growth product, isn't it?
It is. It's an interesting business that is growing by leaps and bounds. And there's a tremendous amount of jobs that are being created here in Iowa, in the solar industry. Iowa, we're fortunate that Iowa is extremely renewable friendly. And as you drive through central Iowa, you'll see a lot of wind turbines. Okay.
That's for sure.
So, Iowa is very friendly towards that with tax credits and incentives. So that causes, a large amount of growth. Our company is an example of that. A couple of years ago, we were 10 or 11 employees. We're 35 employees. We've increased our portfolio by hundreds. So it's definitely on the fast track.
Where do you get employees? You train them yourselves, or are there places where they're trained?
Well, what we do is we obviously, get all of our local help. All of our employees are from the Dubuque County area. And then the training processes that we go through, if we have to send them, out to the areas that they get that. One of the things that we train our employees on is a certification that our company has. The acronym is NABSAP, and, North American Board of Certified Energy Consultants. It's an educational process that we send our people through, and it sets us apart from a lot of people in the state of Iowa because there's not really a lot of NABSAP certified solar installers in Iowa. We happen to be one of them, but there are more, but there's not a lot.
And your company did the whole installation up at Jewell.
That is correct. What we do is we call it, maybe a cradle to grave, where we did the analysis, we did the design, we did all of the paperwork that was associated with the Alliant.
Oh, it was great for them to deal with one source, wasn't it?
That is correct. And then we actually went in and built the array and then got it inspected and turned it on. So we did everything from start to finish.
Now, to what extent are private homeowners responding to this technology? Are you getting some business from people who just want to have it on their roof?
When we look at our portfolio, about 50% of the arrays that we build are residential arrays.
That's good news.
And it's great news. And with, there's tax credits that are available to the private sector. There's a 30% federal tax credit that you can take advantage of. There's an Iowa tax credit that allows you to offset the cost of the array. And when we talk to people about that, the primary focus of what they want to build a solar array, once you get beyond the thing is, yes, this is great for the environment and everybody knows that, but they like to reduce their electricity bills.
Right.
Because that's what it comes down
to. That's a very practical idea.
Right? I own a solar array. I have it on my house and I do not buy electricity from the utility. And I'm very happy about that when I get my bill and it's $10.
So. Well, now, what would the dimensions be on a typical installation on a rooftop for a home?
Well, it's interesting because everybody uses power differently, okay? So I do have some averages, and the average household in the state of Iowa is going to consume about 10,000 kilowatt hours of electricity a year. Okay. Hamilton County happens to, consume 158,000 at Little Wall Lake. Okay. So, and that's what that array produces. So in that configuration, that home is going to require somewhere between 25 or maybe up to 30 individual solar panels connected together to produce that much electricity.
Now, the array that you had at Little Wall Lake, these are obviously very large solar panels. The ones on a roof would be much smaller, right?
Well, they are. They're a little bit different. The standard configuration of a roof array on a residence, a single solar panel is going to be about 3.5 feet wide. It's going to be about 5.5 feet tall. It's going to weigh about 45 pounds. The modules, the solar modules that we used at Little Wall Lake on the ground array are 3.5 feet wide and they're 6.5 feet tall. So they are a little bit bigger because when we put things on the ground, we obviously don't have a height restriction at Little Wall Lake. And they weigh about 50 or 60 pounds. And the Little Wall Lake array, that it actually has 376 of these solar modules.
So the solar for installation on a private residence, that's not a great deal of weight on the roof, is it?
No, what it does is it will add approximately 2.2 pounds per square foot on the roof because the weight is evenly, you know, distributed across the rafter system. So we have never run into an issue where a roof structure wasn't able to hold a solar panel because 2.2 pounds is not a lot of weight.
And now my information is that energy companies are quite receptive to that. Is that generally true, that they encourage this sort of thing?
They encourage it all the time, and it seems in Iowa there's a whole variety of different utility policies, and that's one of the educational processes that we have to take our customers through. When we discuss solar with people, one of the things that I'm adamant about explaining in detail is what their specific utility policy is. Alliant Energy's policy and Mid-Am's policies are very, very similar. When you get into the outlying areas with some of the municipal utilities and as well as the rural electric co-ops, they're all over the place. Some of them are very good, some of them are not so good, and some of them are absolutely not good. But it's all over the board, and that's why it's an educational process. You know, when somebody wants to look at a solar array, I think one of the very first things you need to do is understand your utility policy.
Oh, yeah. Right away, you'd have
Absolutely.
To know exactly where
Yes.
you're coming from
Absolutely.
In terms of their policy. And you just said there's quite a variety.
They're all different.
And so people need to check into that.
Well,
your sales force, do you have folks out there selling?
Yes. What we do is we have a total of six people that sell. You know, four of them are full-time, the other two are part-time. That will, you know, cover Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. Obviously, we're in Dubuque, so right on top of the Mississippi, so we're very close to Wisconsin and Illinois. And what we typically do as a company is we will go, with Dubuque being the basis, about 250-mile radius of the areas that we focus on. We'll definitely go outside of those particular areas depending on the project.
And so folks travel to sell this.
Absolutely.
Now, what percentage of your business is commercial versus private home?
Okay. 50% of our portfolio is residential.
Really?
And then I would say probably the other 30 to 35% would be commercial. And then the rest of it would be what I'll call non-taxable entities, which would be cities, counties, and school districts.
And I really am educated there because I was interested in knowing the breakdown there.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that all kinds of new energy policies and companies are springing up. You know, we're so aware of wind energy. How does solar energy and wind energy compare in terms of, cost savings, that sort of thing?
Well, when you know, both of them are obviously renewable,
right.
Okay? So, and we're a huge advocate of renewable energy. But when, you know, where the solar has the advantages is when you go into the residential market, especially in a city or an entity like that, it might be difficult for somebody to put a wind turbine in downtown Ames, Iowa.
Yes, they're big.
I don't think that maybe the city leaders would appreciate that. So, you know, that's an advantage that solar has, because it can be put in a relatively small area where, you know, a wind turbine might not be the better solution. You know, people look to solar, and Brian alluded to that, is we look at something that it has a 25-year warranty. It doesn't have really very little to no maintenance because there's no moving parts. and that's attractive to people. A solar array has a life expectancy of about 45 years.
Is that right?
So when people decide to put it somewhere, we have to pick a decent spot because it's going to be there for a while.
Now, how does condition, the daily condition of the sun, affect these panels? There are going to be days like today, it's raining out names, and it's cloudy. How does that vary what's going on with the array?
Yeah, that's a great question, and we get asked this question all the time. A solar array will produce energy as long as there's light shining on that. Okay, it just won't produce a lot. So a bright sunny day, obviously it's going to produce a lot more, but a day like today when it's cloudy or rainy out there, it might be running at maybe 5 or 10% of capacity, where a bright sunny day, you know, it will shoot right up, but it definitely will produce energy. It will actually produce electricity if there's a full moon shining on it.
Is that right?
So, and
that's enough. That registers that intensity of light.
Yeah, as long as that light can get through that, it'll definitely produce that, but like I said, not on a large amount. And, you know, what we do as a company is we will analyze people's area, longitude and latitude, and then we gather weather data, daily weather data from the local airport because we want to make an estimation of production that's based off of the weather patterns in their area. So it's part of the technology that we use to try and make it as accurate as possible, knowing that we don't control the sun, but we have access to data that tells us there's a certain percentage of days that are cloudy, rainy, snowy, and full sun.
That is I've learned a lot today about solar energy, and I think that what really attracts me is what you said, no moving parts. As someone who doesn't have mechanical skills, I'm very sensitive to no moving parts.
Right. Yes.
So, and the warranty, that's a long period of time.
Yes, that's a production warranty off the panel. The tier one solar modules that we use, they'll all have 25-year production warranties on that. So that's very attractive.
How vulnerable are they to hail, for instance, and that sort of thing?
If you're in a Tier 1 module, which is the highest rated module, it's rated to withstand a 1-inch piece of hail traveling at 262 miles an hour.
Wow.
And 262 miles an hour is an F5 tornado.
Sure.
So if a tornado goes through and your house is there, you probably have a bigger issue as to whether or not your solar array is there because your house probably isn't. Then it's an insurance issue because a solar array is a piece of equipment.
Now, how does that affect your homeowner's insurance? That's just something that you add on to your policy because another system is functioning there.
It is interesting because the insurance companies are still figuring out how they're going to handle solar arrays. Knowing the best example that I have, which is my own house, the value of my solar array will increase my homeowner's insurance by about $8 per thousand of value.
Okay. That's very affordable, right?
So, you know, if you just do the math on it, if it's $10,000, that's $80 a year. If it's $20,000, it's $160, and that's what my insurance company charges me. So, yes, it's not a lot of money.
So when you go out to sell this product, one thing you really have to mention is how your payback comes in, like the cost of installation that is, what would I say, compensated for by what length of time or whatever. You know.
Yes, what we do is we'll do a solar financial analysis for anybody free of charge, and that analysis is going to cover the cost of the array, the size of the array, how much it's going to produce, what the value of the incentives are. It's also going to tell you what your payback is in years because that's a critical piece of information.
Everyone wants to know that. Yeah.
Everybody wants to know how much, how big, and how long is it going to pay for itself.
I'm glad you're prepared to answer those questions because everyone wants to know up front, you know, the long-term thing.
Yes.
You know.
And when we talk about paybacks on this, and I just go across the board from a business standpoint to a residential standpoint, the paybacks could be anywhere from 4 years to 15 years. And once again, it is directly related to their utility policy.
I like the fact that it's so individualized. When you talk to a client, you're talking about a lot of checking out their power company, their usage, probably the weather conditions and weather patterns.
Yes.
And then you can tell them very accurately First of all, cost of installation, obviously, but also other considerations. It's a real good service to really do that analysis for each client.
Yes, and that's another benefit, I think, when you're working with a solar integrator like us, is we will go the extra mile to make sure that what we put in front of you is accurate. So we're going to do our homework. The reason we do not charge for that, obviously, is because our expectation is that you're going to build a solar array with us. So we'll go ahead and do something like that.
I think right away, the best thing I think anyone in this industry has going for them, other than the simple fact the sun shines and it's rather passive, you know, this stuff's going to happen,
right,
is how you behave ethically and as a sales force and the word of mouth you're going to get when you do all these individual services for the client. That must really grow your business.
It does. We have a huge referral business because we go through a very specific process, and we don't deter from that process to cover all of those bases. Because this is obviously a financial transaction, and I tell people when I visit with them, this is a math problem. We're going to put a lot of numbers in front of you, so now we have to figure out if the numbers work for you.
You're able to interpret that in layperson terms so they understand.
Yes, we have to.
Wow, Larry Steffen, that's Eagle Point Solar. And they've done the array up in Little Wall Lake Park near Jewell. And we've been talking about the industry and how the solar panels function and how it is for people, both commercial and individual homeowners, to consider this power source. So, Larry Steffen, thank you for being here today and educating me about solar power.
I appreciate that. I'm glad to be able to participate.
Well, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Susan.
This is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and the surrounding area. We have been talking with Larry Steffen from Eagle Point Solar in Dubuque about the technical aspects of the installation of a solar array that is expected to provide 100% offset of the electrical use of Little Wall Lake State Park. For the last segment of our program, it's time to return to the East and check out the many events scheduled for Nevada this weekend.
Well, now, Susan, the first event will be Community Barbecue in all Story medical locations on Thursday, May 11th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and to kick off the Medical Center Week from May 7th to 13th. Then on Friday, the American Legion will be hosting a fish fry or meatloaf dinner on Friday, May 12th from 5 to 7:30. Meatloaf or fish, your choice. After dinner on Friday, Gospel Jam will be held from 7 to 9:30 at the Nevada Senior Center. And then on Saturday, Nevada Lions Club will host a pancake feed. That's the 13th, this coming May 13th, Saturday, 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. That's at Gates Hall, the event center in Nevada. It is on all-you-can-eat pancake day and sausage and scrambled eggs, too, so you have a choice. So a lot of things happening.
Well, sounds like you could eat your way through the weekend. Isn't there any action?
Well, it better be, because you're having all these calories coming.
Right.
And to say that, the Nevada Public Safety Department will be holding a bike rodeo on, is it rodeo or rodeo? Anyway, it's a bike rodeo on Saturday, May 13th. That'll be from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. That'll be at the City Hall parking lot, and that's a big place.
What's a bike rodeo?
Well, I have to look that up. Well, the Nevada Public Safety Department announces that the bike rodeo begins with a short demonstration of bike safety. Following that will be helmet fittings and an obstacle course. Skunk River Cycle and Bike World will be on hand to provide safety checks and minor bike tune-ups, and so there will be an obstacle course in the parking lot. Volunteers will be on hand to help with fitting helmets and handing out stickers, items for safe bike riding experiences, and other items of interest to bikers.
Susan, according to the internet, a bicycle rodeo is a clinic to teach children the skills and precaution to ride a bicycle safely.
Oh, Becca came up with the dictionary definition.
It sounds
write
like
that down.
a marketing tool also to get kids to learn bike safety, because rodeo sounds, you know, sounds like you're going to have bucking horses or bucking bicycles or something.
Well, now, in addition to that, the Nevada Public Safety Department, Story County Sheriff's Office, and Nevada Fire Vehicles, they're all going to be on hand for kids to check out. And boy, do kids love to get on fire trucks.
That's right.
There's no question about that. And I know it's all leading up to the celebration of Mother's Day at Gatherings. That's a place, Gatherings, on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in Nevada.
Reading about the event at Gatherings made me curious to know more about it. I could see that Gatherings was a large storefront on Main Street. Going online, I saw pictures of the large interior spaces set up with antique tables and chairs and with long tables with white cloths and inviting lights overhead. I read about the owner and chef, Evie Peterson, but when I called, Stephanie Badger answered, explaining that Evie was busy cooking for a big dinner. So my information came from her. Here's what Stephanie told me. What is your role in Gatherings?
I am the general manager of Gatherings and Farmhouse Catering. Gatherings is an event venue, so we do wedding receptions and corporate events, graduation parties. Well, we even had a presidential candidate come once and do a little dinner there. So we do a lot of different things.
And you have a catering kitchen, is that right?
Yes, ma'am. Gatherings originally came from Farmhouse Catering. So Evie has been catering for over a decade and has always wanted her own venue. So in 2014, the building came up for sale and she bought it, and it's just taken off. She does all the cooking. It's all her recipes.
Well, now, as general manager, what is your job?
My job is to just complement Evie's brain. So she comes up with all these ideas, and I help her execute them, and then we just run this business together.
What was the evolution of your collaboration? How long have you been with her?
So I've been with her for about 5 years, almost six now, and I met her. I'd moved into town, and she lived right across the street, and then we became friends, and then she invited me to help her serve food when she would cater wedding receptions at other venues, and it's just grown ever since then. So we're really good friends. We both have four kids, and our kids are all friends, and we just do this really fun life and job.
Well, both of you on the website stressed your wanting to promote the community. And could you talk a little about how you do that?
We do free events to invite the community, because most of our clientele, like for weddings, they're from out of town. And we have a family game night coming up, and we have a Mother's Day brunch that we're doing this Sunday. So we try to do all sorts of things throughout the year so that the community can come in and spend time with us and us with them.
I believe that you are active in the Chamber of Commerce.
Yes, ma'am. Yep. I'm on the Chamber Board of Directors, and so I build relationships with the other businesses downtown. To me, I have a lot of friends on this one street, but it's just a really neat environment that we have here in Nevada, where the business owners work together to promote the city as a whole and not just an individual bottom line.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say before we close the interview?
I will just say for this Mother's Day brunch that we're still taking reservations, and you can call us at 515-230-2717 to make your reservation.
Thank you very much.
And this is KHOI Community Radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. I'm one of your hosts today, Paul Wearson, together with my co-host, Susan Franson. Now, voices you heard on today's show, Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms of the Iowa Bird of Mouth Project, Brian Lammer is Executive Director of Hamilton County Conservation, and we just talked with Larry Steffen from Eagle Point Solar.
Stephanie Badger, General Manager of Gatherings in Nevada.
So, that's our show today, Susan. Fun.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at noon and 7 p.m. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories. You can like us on Facebook and get updates on all of our show postings in your news feed.
Well, Local Talk was engineered today by Rebecca Reuter, and our theme song is always Backtracked by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878, or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. That's also what you need to know to contact us if you decide to become a member or renew your membership today. Just look for the yellow donate button.
If you did enjoy the show today, just tell your friends. Remember, your participation as a listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.